And welcome to the Smoke Break. I'm your host, your old pal Zane, here with Jasmine Nothing.
I am so sleepy today.
And Jane Dillinger.
Hi.
I am so excited.
Less sleepy, apparently.
Less sleepy.
I have enough energy for all of us.
Oh, good. That's going to work out perfect.
Jane, I'm so glad you brought the energy because I am halfway here. But I'm super excited to have you. But first, I wanted to do a real quick disclaimer, which is to say that this show is for entertainment purposes only. We work in the field of mental health, but do not claim to be professionals
in that space.
Our intention is to have conversations around lived experiences. As a result, we may not always agree with our guests. But we do intend to hold
space
for open conversations and learning from
one
another. There we go.
Oh my God.
We made it. Jane, so excited to have you.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here. Yeah, thank you so much.
This is going
to
be a fun one. So right there was a perfect example of me needing help, but I didn't know how to ask for it. But you kind of knew when to jump in.
My God, the segue immediately.
I know. I'm getting better at these.
Well done.
I'm getting better at these. So we're talking about asking for help with your ad-libs when you're rapping. No,
Or other things.
Or other things, you
other
know?
Things.
To make it more relatable.
Relatable.
Yes. So asking for help, is that something that's easy for you?
Oh, hell no. It is one of the scariest things ever.
Yeah.
My history with asking for help is, like, I'm trans, and so, like, I had a lot of, like, prior to realizing that was, like, I just realized somebody out there is like, oh, how long is it going to take her before she mentions being trans?
Oh,
and it's like, Cody, you were correct. First 30 seconds. much love, Cody Webb. Why did I do that? He's like, he's not with us anymore.
Rest in peace, but he's alive.
Yeah, absolutely. Do the cross thingy.
Yep. Taylor's over there just shaking his head. So when you, like, think that you're supposed to be, like, a guy, you get, like, really wrapped up in being, like, as strong as possible and being independent and self-reliant and all this other stuff. And it makes you a very useful, like idiot as far as, like, not building community and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, like, asking for help has always been one of the scariest things that's ever happened to me. Mm-hmm. And after transitioning and, like, starting to, like, really question and distance myself from all those, like, masculine things that, like, I kind of, like, took for granted that, like, I needed to do.
Yeah.
I realized how, like, deeply, like, traumatized I was from a lot of experiences that I had had, and, like, really got, like, really agoraphobic to where, like, I couldn't leave the house and was, like, really just scared all the time. And the first help that I had to ask for was to, like, find a therapist saying, like, hey, I'm a new, like, queer person and I'm really scared all the time and dealing with all this stuff. After I found someone, I found, like, a really amazing therapist, and she was like, oh, you have PTSD. Like, that's why you can't leave the house. And I was like, oh, okay, great. So that was, like, months of, like, intense, like, two times a week, like, therapy where I was, like, given goals to, like, work for, like, just, like, go to the grocery store or something like that.
Yeah, something small, manageable.
Yeah, yeah. Go at a time where there's,
or theoretically, like, is small and manageable, depending on who you are.
Yes. Very accurate.
yeah, exactly. And that's what's kind of interesting about, like, making those kinds of, like, changes in your life is that you can break them down to, like, the smallest, like, grain possible. So, like, going to the grocery store was really scary for me. Like, I didn't do it for months. And it was like, okay, so go to the store when there's no one else there.
Okay.
And so it's like, try to pick a time where it's, like, you know, really early in the morning or something like that. So it, like, takes
right
some of
those. Lunch.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's how I would like to run every errand.
Yeah.
It was with no people anywhere else.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, that was one of the first ways that I started to, like, kind of challenge and be able to, like, overcome fear is by breaking it down to, like, the least scary step version of it, but it was still helpful to me. And how that relates back to asking for help is, like, me asking for help, like, helped me. Like, what I got in return for asking for help was getting the diagnosis so that, like, I knew what I could do.
Yes.
And after I made those first couple steps, it creates, like, a positive feedback loop where it's like you become stronger and more, like, self-reliant, which sounds like the opposite of what I was, like, talking about.
By asking for help, you don't associate those things.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it makes you, like, stronger and more capable of, like, helping other people. So, like, that became my dynamic is, like, ask people for help so that you can like get better, so that you can provide help to other people.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it creates this really nice, like positive, like momentum kind of thing. So when I'm asking for help now, like that's, I still think back to that first like initial time being like, I can't do this on my own and I need help.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, part of me asking for help is that I will get the answer that I seek so that I can then provide it to somebody else who needs it in the future.
Yeah.
And that's been great.
No, well, I'm glad that you've been able to use it as like almost like a model, you know, for yourself, where you can look back and be like, hey, I remember that this was really hard, but I also remember the benefits of asking for help.
I also think that the grocery store is uniquely stupid. I don't have agoraphobia, and it's like the one thing that's like the one change that happened during COVID that I have stuck with is like I do not go to the grocery store.
Mm.
I have all my food delivered and I don't care.
Yes, I do too.
Absolutely. Stupid Amazon Fresh arriving at my house and I feel guilty about it, and then I balance it out with doing other good deeds.
Yeah.
But like I cannot. I just get so mad at everyone in the store. Mostly just like, what, why are you taking up the entire aisle? Why are you being like that? Why are you being loud? Why are like, just, and then I just stay home.
I definitely feel that with like the anxiety of going to the store. There's so many people there, right? There's like, what was your fear with like people? Cause it's like, I feel like personally with my fear, it's the, like, I don't know them and I don't know how they're viewing me. So it's like any public space I go into, I have that anxiety. Do you feel like you kind of had that anxiety and were able to like build into other places where it's like, I have this fear, but I don't have it here?
Yeah, actually. And that's interesting. Like since you both say that, like, you're kind of still, you still have like issues with like interacting with other people or being around other people in spaces like that, is like, so that used to be really impossible for me, but now it's not. And now I'm like kind of thinking in my brain, what exactly like happened? Because now I just like don't give a fuck, like, mm-hmm. being around like other people in public. Yeah. Cause it's like, they've got their own thing going on. And if they're like blocking the whole aisle or whatever, it's like, I can just go to like turn around. Like, I've done that so many times. Yeah. Where it's just like, I don't want to deal with whatever this is, so I'm just going to turn around.
But like, okay, maybe like an example right here is like, there's people in the way and you're like asking them to move. Cause even asking, like, that's in a very small way help, you know, but it's like, that could be a very big thing of like just asking two people to be like, hey, can you not stand here?
Yeah,
that's such a scary thing of just being like, hey, I'm about to ask something of you that you wouldn't normally have to do unless you were asked.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it's very like relative, and mm-hmm. like I'm thinking that it's like, I have no idea where, it's like trying to meet people where they are, and it's like, I have no idea where anybody is, mm. like at any given time.
That's, yeah,
but
I like that.
Instead of paralyzing me with like anxiety and not being able to map out every possible like solution to it, it's more like, I can just like let go and just do the thing. And then if something else comes up afterwards, then I'll deal with that as well.
Yeah.
Which you said, like, how does it relate to other fear spaces? Is like, it's sort of like, it is a model for just like confronting any sort of fear at all. Yeah. Is like, just do my best and let go and like reflect very deeply on what happens so that I can identify what skills I need to build and then try again and just not hold myself unfairly to account.
Yeah.
Everything.
No, I think mm-hmm. I think that's good. What does that make you think of, Jasmine?
Honestly, what I was thinking about that entire time is the idea of in motivational interviewing, there's a thing called minimal encouragers, which is the tiny things that you say to people in between when they're saying other things that just encourage the people to keep talking. And I understand that that's really good for podcasting and that you need to do it the whole time. And then you were doing it. And then I was trying to do it. And then I realized I was doing the exact same ones you were doing at the same time you were doing it. Slightly quieter. That's what I was thinking about.
It was like the ad libs, but for my minimal encouragers, just like mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I was doing the exact same one, so like that's not helpful.
I love that.
That's what I thought of.
We just said all that at the same time. We are so linked and synced up.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh, I can't wait to listen back to this later and hear all the little things. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That's so funny.
And now we're just going to be like nice and uncomfortable and notice them every time we do them for the rest of the time. So that's going to be really neat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Asking for help sucks. I don't like to do it. I'm going to move on. Remember the episode we did recently about love and how that was the topic where you had no interest in talking about it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like asking for help.
You
and
don't.
It's,
you don't.
I do not.
Where do you think that comes
which
from?
Is, oh, sorry.
I think I've said it before, but like toxic independence stuff, just like I did not spent a whole lot of time alone as a kid and just kind of like making stuff happen and doing stuff on my own. I also think that people are not dependable. And so if you depend on somebody else for help, then they fall through. Then like, I feel like the idiot of like, why did I depend on this other person?
Yeah.
And so what if I just get everything done myself? And I'm also really good at getting things done myself. And if I continually am able to do that without like it backfiring, then like, why ask for anything?
Well, I think that, asking for help can be helpful if you're at a spot in it where you literally can't do the next spot, like the next thing. I think where it gets complicated is like when we ask for help on things that we could do ourselves, and then like we're just putting a barrier in between us getting it done. You know what I mean? Like I've definitely asked people to do things that I could have or should have done. And then like I put it out like another week just because it's like I have to ask them. They have to find time. And it's like, had I just done the thing instead of asking slash waiting? There's definitely times where I think it's helpful to do it yourself. I also think that there's things that like my thing that I will say for a million years is I don't do visual stuff. Do not do visual stuff. I'm just like sounds, talking, all of it. Music, I can figure it out. Uh-huh. If you hand me a picture, I will say it's
That's
a picture.
Nice.
It is a picture. That is as much of a review as I can give it. So, but I know that I have to ask like Jasmine or, you know, some of my more visually artistic friends.
Okay. Yeah. So like in terms of like deriving meaning from like how you feel about like looking at, you know, like a painting or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I can derive meaning, but like if you were to ask me how to, like make it better, like if I was having you edit a picture for me and then you were just what do you think it should look like? What should the colors be? I'd be like, I need a picture by the end of this. That's all I know.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's very interesting.
Yeah. Do you feel like there's anything that like there's things that you specialize in and there's things that like you outsource for, I guess?
Yeah, I'm definitely weak in terms of like finding community. I come from like a really, really isolated background.
Sure.
And I still struggle with like isolation like all the time. It's one of the reasons I'm so like thankful and grateful for the like comedy scene in Portland, specifically the queer comedy scene in Portland, is because it was like a place where I could go out and see people like me. And even if I didn't talk to anybody at a show, I would still feel less isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I overcame the fear of like talking to people. And I started like going up to comedians and being like, that meant so much to me to see this. And thank you very much for like just being here and doing the thing. And that was like sort of like the pebble down the mountain of like breaking some of my isolation.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's probably like one of the weakest skills that I have is like talking to other people and being like vulnerable and stuff like that.
So do you kind of like have a person where you're just like, hey, if you can get the conversation started, I can keep it going. So it's just like, because, you know, sometimes I need somebody to help bridge a gap, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm becoming more and more of that person.
That's cool. That's cool. So you're becoming that for yourself. So it's something that you don't necessarily have to ask for help for. It's a weakness, but it's something that you're strengthening.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
That's really cool. Yeah. That's really cool. Something that both of you kind of brought up and I'm kind of curious about was you were referring to like your how you previously were identifying as being like this, like because of like the masculine, I have to be strong, I have to be alone or whatever the fuck. But like you were also explaining like a very like independent style, like, you know, style thing. I feel like there's room on like every part of the spectrum to kind of have this gendered, like, I have to be an independent woman, I have to be an independent man, I have to be an independent person, fucking whatever it is that, like, we kind of, like, fall into. Did you ever, like, was gender ever, like, a role in yours where it was, like, I have to be an independent person, or is it just I have to be...
I don't know.
You don't know?
No, this isn't... I'm trying to think of it now. I think... I had like a desire to be like physically strong, I think, because there's a lot of assumptions about fat people.
Okay.
So maybe less gendered and more like body size stuff. When you're like having this desire to be like really physically strong, and like, I don't know, I've moved some shit that there is no possible reason I should have moved myself, like furniture wise.
Yeah.
Just being like, nope, fuck you, I'm fine.
Tell me I can't, god damn it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that like a lot of that stuff can be motivating, you know, just like, you know what, I want to break whatever fucking idea there is about this of like, this is exclusive to this or this.
For sure.
So. Yeah. I was kind of picking up, I know, is that like you're like how you were describing it is like you're like a superhero. Like you're doing all these things like alone because you can and because other people like aren't capable of meeting you at your high level.
And I feel really useful when I help other people.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. And you've helped me a lot. So it's definitely it's a strength. Yeah.
It's a goddamn strength. And we will be right back with the smoke break. Jane.
Welcome back to the smoke break. It's your old pal, Jane. I'm here with Jasmine Nothing and Zane Something.
Hello.
Yes.
And on this week, in this section, in this minute, we are talking about absurdism. Took me a second to get there, but goodness, is it important.
Yep. Staring
into the void.
I was waiting for like the music cue to come up, and it's like, there is no music
cue. It's just the red line starts moving. This sounds bad. Never mind. So, absurdism.
Yeah. So,
why did you want to talk about that today?
So one of the reasons I was thinking about absurdism is because it feels like when everything is like really like fucked up and you're dealing with like not only like it like insane worldly things like you know like the you know Trump administration for example but you're also dealing with like really difficult and like hard to understand circumstances in your own life.
Yeah.
That's when I sort of like brush up on like absurdism, which is like the Camus sort of like popularized it, being that it's like the conflict between the fact that the universe has no inherent meaning and yet humanity like and individual humans like we strive to find meaning in everything. So it's like how do we reconcile those two subjects? And as we were talking before, it's like to stop at saying that like life has no inherent meaning and then to just like stop thinking about it, that's like nihilism, which can create like a really like a negative space or like a vacuum where you fall into like hedonism or
the real fuck it attitude.
Yeah. It's like, but fuck it for the sake of fucking it. Like you're just like, oh, I just, you know, don't want to do this. And I'm using nihilism as my excuse for not doing something.
Well, it doesn't matter. So fuck it. I'll do whatever.
Yeah. Whereas I feel like absurdism is more
it's the same idea.
Yeah. It's the same idea
for evil.
But I think absurdism is positive, where it's just like, it doesn't matter, so fuck it, you know?
Yeah. And so how I see it is like, once you acknowledge that, like, life has no meaning, but I want to find meaning, like, that's like a very, like, empowering and motivational sort of thing. It's like, so if nothing matters, the only thing that really matters are the things that I find most important. And maybe it's just me personally, but the things I find most important is, like, helping other people and like making sure that other people's like autonomy and freedom is supported and that like their voices are heard and stuff like that. So it's like what I see is not mattering is like my own anxiety, or what doesn't matter is like the obstacles. Like what really matters is like what we do in the face of them.
Yeah. Well, and I like that just almost like the separation between like matter and importance. Because it's like something can like not really, I mean, they're both almost the same word, but I almost attribute importance to more of a like, it is an individualized, like a definition. It's an individualized definition of just like, this is important to me. Does it matter? Maybe not. I don't know. But is it important? Is it important? Does it mean something to me? Mm-hmm. I think is like a better way. Because I think you can ultimately say like, I don't know. I picked up a piece of trash. Did it matter? Sure, maybe not. But like, was it important to me to do that? Yes. I also really like the idea about the absurdism of the like, you know, if like nothing matters, like the next step after that is like, it doesn't matter that nothing matters. You know, like you kind of have to like just go a little bit further to get to the spot where you're like, okay, well then, yeah, fine. Fuck it. Like, just have fun.
I was thinking frequently, especially in these times, just think about like you can either laugh or cry in response to
watch me do both
most everything. Crying is useful sometimes, but feels bad most of the time. And so I feel like there's just been a lot of times where things in our particular life together has been particularly absurd as of late. And some of the most ridiculous laughter that I've had with like specifically with you recently has been doing really bad times and has been kind of great. And laughing at hard stuff has not ever been like my strongest suit.
Really?
No, this is all you, Zane.
So I eventually hit this point.
You are changing me.
I'm just chemically brainwashed.
So
The thing that like happens for me is that like things will get really bad, and I have bipolar, well, I have all sorts of shit, but like for the bipolar part of it, things will get really bad and I'll get really upset, right? I'm just following my emotions. I'm just angry about it. Eventually it will hit a point where it is so bad it is now funny, where it's like, of course this happened, you know, like that's basically like, that's when I embrace absurdism, is like, of course this happened, where it's like, you go to a show, you're already running late and you've been panicking and you've been freaking out on everybody because you were late, and you get there only to find out it hadn't started yet, you know, just like
that has happened a lot
every you know what I mean, where it's just like every fucking time, where it's just like things either line up or don't line up so well that you almost have to just fucking laugh and be like, is there really not like a divine thing just kind of like fucking with me up there? Like, cause this is, it's so almost perfect, perfectly imperfect.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. You mentioned that, like, is there somebody like, who's like looking out to like mess things up and stuff. And like that, I feel, is so much.
Sitcom God.
Yeah. Yeah. This sitcom God. That sort of is like the, I like that a lot too. Like a reflection of you coming to terms with like your own expectations, like mm-hmm. you thinking that there is like a script to everything, yeah. but the universe has like no script, you know, mm-hmm. like there's,
damn it.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. And also it is really easy like to think that you're being like punished or something like that, because sure. your memory is able to piece together like the narrative of events that have happened mm-hmm. so far. And when, like, you have to keep in mind that like there is nobody out there like who's like punishing you and like watching you. There's no scorecard. Like
the fact that our president is our president is proof that good does not get you good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? So it's like to beat yourself up and be like, I'm being punished, when clearly like the people who should be aren't. Then like, you know, once again, it's kind of what we were talking about. You know, what makes you so fucking special?
Yeah, yeah.
Like in the sweetest, kindest of ways.
Yeah, that was another like a thing that a therapist had told me was, it's like if you like think that like somebody is like looking out and like punishing you, or like that is like an arrogance, yeah. Sort of, is because it's like you're seeing yourself as different from everyone else, and it's like, well, that's just like the way life is. Mm-hmm. Is that there's like good
rarely
things and
have
bad
you
things
said something
happen.
That is so smart that I also hate so much.
Mm.
Do not like this answer.
Why are you battling it? Here, why are you battling, Jasmine? Talk to me.
Yeah.
No, just the idea. Like I don't. Yeah, the idea that something would be arrogant that I'm doing sucks, and. Also, yeah, I find myself to be an exception to lots of rules of like how I would treat other people or expect things from other people.
Yeah. Well, you're somebody who is very supportive, but I feel like is resistant to being supported.
Absolutely.
Mm.
You answered that very quickly, Jasmine.
Yeah.
That used to be mean.
You spend some time with me. It's,
yeah.
You notice some things.
I do, just every once in a while. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think that that's normal. I think that, you know, there's a feeling of strength and like, I got all this done by myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll open up a little bit, I guess, on this mental health podcast that I created a really long time ago. I lost my train of thought. I was talking about...
I mean, you were going to open up, I think, about something that somebody had to help you with that you were not able to do on your own.
I was not able to do on my own. Nope, totally lost it. I think it was anybody else.
Actually, have you shared the like guitar amp like Sisyphus story?
I haven't actually. That's actually
it is very relevant.
Very relevant. Very relevant. So you were talking about Sisyphus earlier, and so. I started off being a rapper, and I couldn't find anybody to make instrumentals. So I picked up a guitar. My friend put it on me. I looked at myself in the mirror. I'm like, I look fucking cool. I'm a guitar player now. I played it for a very long time. It did not have an amp. And I was just like, dude, can we jam together? And he was just like, well, you got to get a new guitar. So I bought a new guitar. I was like, cool, can we jam together? He's like, but your amp, you got to get a new amp. So I got an amp. It wasn't the same kind of amp that he had. So he told me I needed to get the same kind of amp. So I bought two different amps, Jesus a new guitar. Christ. And finally, I get this fucking 120 watt amp. If you know music, they're huge. I put it on my longboard, lived in a small town, and I would push it up this fucking hill so that way I could go to his house. And by the time I finally pushed it all the way up the hill, got to his house, I was like, hey, can we play? And he's like, I'm at my brother's drinking. And I was just like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
Oh, so he wasn't even home?
He wasn't even home. I called him from his house.
God, what a bad friend.
Dumb
bad
fucking
friend.
Dude.
Terrible collaborator.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. But it was it came from having a desire to ask for help. There we go. We circled back around. Thank you. You're awesome. asking for help and then almost kind of like coming to terms with like having to do things on my own, you know, and like realizing that like I could either keep pushing that amp up the fucking hill and be upset that like it rolled back down, or I could fucking be like, all right, well, like, what if I just push this fucking rock down that, you know what I mean? Like, we'll just push it a different direction and like keep it at the bottom of the hill. You can at least fucking
play with
it.
What if I made things easier for once?
What a concept. What a concept.
I wish I could make that noise. That was very like.
I practiced beatboxing before I got here, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Wild boots and cats.
I was also thinking about like absurdism being kind of like attached to like the idea of like whimsy or luck or something. Mm. And you had talked a while ago about like that you used to like see signs and stuff, and then you kind of gave up on that, and that recently that has shifted, and you started like seeing signs again.
Yeah.
And. What changed to make you see them again, I guess?
I think it's the placing the meaning on it, because I think initially my belief was this is here because there is an inherent purpose. Mm-hmm. So that's why this is here. That's why I'm seeing this sign. Then I eventually circled back around to like, oh, like there's no such thing as signs. Your brain just wants to make associations, yada, yada. It's, fuck you, magic in life. And they just sucked that out of that. But then I came back around to... It doesn't matter if this is a sign from anybody, anything, anywhere. This means this is important to me, you know? So it's like I get to put the importance in whether or not this is a sign.
Yeah, back to like the importance
absurdism
versus meaning.
Yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's just like I get to place meaning in this.
That's so funny. I had like the exact same experience where, like I was looking for patterns and things, like thinking that it's like, oh, okay, if I can just put the puzzle together in the right way, everything will work out and I'll be okay, which is very PTSD coded, you know, trying to find the ultimate solution to everything.
So there's no problems. Nothing hurts anymore, ever.
Ever. Yeah. I'm You'll perfect just be forever. Safe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just be safe forever. Which if only it was that easy. But and then it's like coming to the point where it's just like, oh, none of these like patterns or anything means any, like nothing matters. It's like just the worst like version of that. But like, yeah, you start to like believe in yourself a little bit and being like, because this is important to me, it means like, yeah, something to me, so I'm gonna move towards it. I actually like look at my horoscope like every morning, and like I've started doing like tarot readings like every morning, like not because they're a prescription of what is going to happen, but it's more a description of like what's on my mind, and like if I'm resonating for something or resonating with something, like pursue it.
Yeah, and I think that that's also a really good example of just like whether or not the fucking stars aligned and this is true doesn't matter. It's the importance that you get to put into it. You get to kind of pick each piece and be like, yeah, I actually have been dealing with this, and having the idea that, you know, that might be easier today or whatever, or easier to talk about, I think is, yeah, I think it's about placing our own meaning in things, because I think ultimately, no, there's really, you know, we're kind of just here and we don't really know how we're here, but we do know we're here, I think.
Are here and real. I just like to decide whether my day is going to be good or bad based on what number of squirrels and crows I see on my commute to work.
I feel like every day. a good basis, you know.
And sometimes I can increase it by throwing peanuts out if I think I want to have a better day. Because I keep peanuts in the back of the car just in case, so I can make friends.
That's how you make your own luck, though.
I got a question. What happens if like you're wrong? Like you have like a no crows or squirrels show up that morning, but you still have a good day.
Ooh.
Do you log that information or do you ignore it?
No, I immediately ignore it.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah, isn't that so wonderful that we can do that, though? Like, it's because, like, we're not, like, it's not a prescription for, like, the day. It's like,
It's not like religion or something where you have to be, like, so married to the rules of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I just get to make it up because I know that I made it up in the first place.
Yeah. And so, like, the only, so it's all positive reinforcement and not, like, it's, like, you're never getting, like, punished by the fact that you didn't see enough.
Yeah. Except this one day recently, I think we were in the car together.
Then you messaged me.
There was a dead squirrel, like a recently dead squirrel on the road being eaten by several crows. Ooh. And I was just like, fuck.
What do you do with that?
I should go home. I don't think I should be in public today. This is not going to go well.
That's actually one of the tarot cards squirrel and crows.
That's a fucked up deck.
Which was even crazier because I was driving down the street, saw a squirrel eating a crow, and I was like, now what do I do? Guess I'll go meet Jasmine. And it all balanced out.
Perfect. Like, I haven't eaten in a while.
This reminds me. All right, awesome. We're going to take a real quick break, and we will be right back with the smoke break. And welcome back to the smoke break. We are your old pals,
Zane.
Here with
Jasmine. Nothing. That's it.
Wow.
That's
wow.
enough.
That's enough.
It's plenty.
Welcome back.
I heard you were going to maybe experiment with, instead of Jasmine, nothing is Jasmine, full stop.
I like that. Maybe change it up.
It'd be a pretty good like rap name.
Ooh, yeah. Oh my gosh. Can we break it on this episode? Yeah. So Jasmine is actually, like Zane said, that they've been beatboxing. Jasmine's actually been working on their raps.
Oh, my God.
This is the episode where it happens. And
yeah.
I know I'm a little bit nervous. I know you're nervous, but I think we're going to be able to pull it off.
Yeah. Let's count this off. One and a two and a three.
So this week we're talking about improvisation, right? Perfect example. I'm glad you yes anded all of that.
I would never.
That's called no but.
Back to full stop.
An amazing bailout too, by the way. It's like you're able to just be like, nope, and scene.
Exactly.
I famously hate participating in things. And
how do you feel about improv?
Really bad. And frequently lead things so I don't have to participate in them.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Which... You figured out my strategy.
Mm-hmm. Works really well.
Jasmine, you were actually the first person to notice that like I try to get away with not answering the questions that I ask. Where I'll just be like, hey, tell me what you think, everybody, about your spray. That's cool. Well, what's the next thing you think? And you're like, you didn't answer the question. And now I do that to you in meetings.
Ooh.
I'm like, ooh.
And we both hate it.
Fair.
And maybe also feel appreciative of it.
Yeah, it's just like I ask because I care.
That's what growing feels like.
Gross.
Like, I don't like this, but
growth.
Ew.
Well, I feel like growth for me kind of happens when I just embrace the fact that like I don't know what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like the more that you can kind of, I guess, just show up, you know? Like I feel like showing up to like a scene, showing up to a place, showing up to an event, something in your life, it's the first part is just showing up, you know.
Which is hard enough.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Like, don't let me undersell that. That's hard.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like we were talking back at the beginning of the podcast, like sometimes something that seems really simple, like going to the grocery store, is so fucking hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's the unpredictability of it. And I think the thing that allows you to be able to show up to a situation you can't predict is knowing that you will... that you have handled everything thus far. You know what I mean? That like you've survived like your worst days. Like, so at the very least, you will survive this, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
It's pretty likely.
Most of the evidence says you've lived this long. So I think like just being willing to like accept other outcomes that aren't like the one that you had kind of guessed, hoped for, you know, of just like, I hope I go here and everything goes perfect. Like you have to be able to improvise the second that it doesn't go perfect and be like, okay, well, that's not how this scene was going to go. I thought we were going to be at a bus stop. Looks like we're at a turnpike. It was just a word that came up into my brain.
Yeah. Which,
magic. We captured it. We captured it, folks.
Oh, my gosh. Lightning. Meat bottle.
That's going to be a clip.
It's perfect.
And that's the interesting thing about like improv is that it is sort of like it breaks like that idea of there being a script that we were just talking about during like absurdism.
My God, the callbacks.
I know. Yeah, I've been paying attention. But yeah, really. So it's like there is no script, and like you're like letting go of your own like expectations for what's going to happen. And what's interesting is improv comes naturally to everyone because it's part of a survival like instinct.
That makes sense.
So once you let go, like the improvisation takes its place. Mm. Like you're not going to be paralyzed because you've also let go of the paralysis. And as long as you chop wood, carry water, keep pushing the amp up the hill, like you'll get to the next thing and like you will figure it out as long as you do instead of like sitting still.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely appreciate that. Like I've been so I've been like picking up music, getting more into that and stuff. And then like I think of improvisation in terms of just like music, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just like oftentimes when you're writing, that's you improvising and being like, oh, I should keep that, you know? So it's just like you have to almost be able to channel an ability to free yourself enough to just come up with anything and kind of allow it room to be bad, you know? Mm-hmm. You know?
Ooh. Hemingway, I think of all the time for the good reasons, not for the bad reasons.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, no.
good clarification.
There are two things about Hemingway that I reflect upon a lot. the The first one is the concept write drunk, edit sober.
Yes, I love that. Love it.
Yeah, I love it. I love it a lot too. It's funny. I was thinking, it's just like, but that kind of means that like I always have to drink to write, and I don't really want to fall into that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like I found a way to.
But it does help.
But it does help. Yes. But there's a way to reframe it so like you can still access that through sobriety, which is write freely, edit intentionally.
Mm-mm.
And that's what I would love to get to the point to do, is where I can like turning on a faucet. It's like, okay, I'm going to just free associate and free create. And it's like, that's a skill that you have to build over time.
Yeah.
And I think one of the best ways to build that skill is to like, to let go and just like be present. And, yeah.
Well, and it's kind of funny too. And I don't know if this is going to be like one of those really weird, like adventure-y days where it's just like everything just kind of connects, but there's a thing called Cypher Saturdays, which is like a freestyle session where everyone just kind of gets together and just like a producer brings a beat and everyone just kind of gets around and freestyling is like this really interesting thing that I have like a history with. I used to get drunk at parties and freestyle, right? Which is like common for parties. There's always somebody there doing that. But like, I actually was like really good at freestyling. And
hell yeah.
But the problem was that like, I couldn't write as good as I could freestyle, and I couldn't always freestyle that well. So it was like, I felt like I was judging myself unfairly, but like also not giving myself enough credit, right? Because I'm just like, well, I can't write that well. It's like, but you can freestyle pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel like it's almost even similar with comedy, where it's just like I can improvise these jokes in the moment, but like the stuff that I write down isn't as good, you know, like just kind of like understanding that a lot of creation happens just in the moment, and it comes from trusting yourself enough to be able to figure out what the next part is.
Yeah, definitely.
When was the last time you tried to freestyle?
Well, when you were supposed to beatbox.
I fucked it up.
Last time I tried to freestyle, let's see. I don't know. Sometimes like I'll be in the car. I'm just gonna put this in my hair. It's a little late for the episode. It's gonna look funny. But I sometimes like an instrumental beat will come on because like I'll just save them because I'll be like, oh, that's cool. Maybe I want to produce like it or just you know something. But I'll come across it and I'll just be like, all right, just talk, just rap. And sometimes it's getting through the nonsense first, and then you know. I think that's what so much of it is. It's just going, that's nonsense. That's not what I wanted. That's not what it. There's the gem. Cool. Hold on to that. See what. How can I create it? How can I tie it together?
Yeah.
You can like warm up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, actually, that's funny. You mentioned that is like letting the tape run, essentially.
Yes.
Like when I was building my first like music like setup, like I built improvisation into the structure of it, where I would just like hit record and like set up like loops to where it's just like, okay, this piano riff like sounds pretty cool. Yep. Let's loop it and keep it. And you know, there would be tracks that are like 45 minutes long or something like that. Yeah. But it's like, you know, some of it would be usable. So it's like, okay, so let's focus in on those and then start a new tape the next day.
Yeah.
And
I like that. I like that, the whole like letting the tape run, because I've definitely like recorded and then been like, I didn't like all this, but this part.
Yeah. And there's a thing with doing takes where if you're trying to get the perfect take, you'll end up like hitting stop and record and stop and record like 60 times in an hour, and it'll just drive you insane.
Yeah.
And it is becomes like really discouraging to do that. But if you just like let the tape run and then edit later, like you're writing freely and then editing like with intention. That helps a lot.
I like the write freely, edit with intention. What is that how you feel like you write, Jasmine?
No, because I barely edit. Because there's no time, because I'm incapable of doing things in advance and always write the things that I need to, and like less than 24 hours before I need to actually use them. And so it is normally.
That's how I do all my work for you.
Great. But it's actually worked out pretty well, so it's fine.
So you're saying it's on time, though.
That's what counts.
Nothing you say on the podcast can be used against you.
Yep. Those are the rules we said at the beginning.
So that works. I feel like I hardly ever edit anything. In times where I have tried to edit later, I'm like, I'm kind of taking out like the weird kind of like... I feel like I take out some of the silliness of it if when I go back to edit and like make it like a cleaner version or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was also just thinking about with improvisation, like I don't want to do it. And also I think that it does show up in various parts of my life. I think at work a lot, there's frequently just like, oh, this is a bizarre situation that is now just happening.
Yep.
And I'm going to just handle it and make it up as I go, which is weird. And I've worked there for so long and it doesn't matter because still things, I mean, something happened last Sunday where I was like, I don't know about that. And what's okay.
I haven't had to deal with this before. Yeah. Now I have to come up with an answer.
That's fine. Especially like being a manager when other people are asking you all the time, like what you should do.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'll make that up. And then the other stuff is like when I started my show, I had like the whole like, preamble of with all this information on it. And I had every single word written out, like full sentence. Mm-hmm. And I needed that real bad. Mm-hmm. And then over time, being able to just like have bullet points on there instead and just kind of like fill it in.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. like the thing that I'm the most scared of, and I think one of the things I've probably gotten better at over time is the like people go up and they like, do their bits or their story or their jokes or whatever, and then you have to like say something about that before you bring the next person on. And I will spend so much time like being terrified of not having something. Like, what if also sometimes it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to like think of something. Yeah, and then you have to like say something nice about it or reflective or something or lie. but you have to think of that real swiftly before you go back up. And those are the things that I have practiced a lot and am better at, but are still hard.
Yeah.
Well,
I wanted to point something out as well, as like, because we're talking about how it's like difficult to do that, and I just wanted to mention how like groups, like improv groups, like build chemistry with themselves. It's like they like do a lot of work like off stage where they learn how to like listen to each other, they learn their like senses of humor, etc. And even if you're like a solo like performer or you're like a solo producer, solo host, like that, like I think that's some of the work that you're doing in the writing, is you're getting to know like yourself and mm-hmm. like what works for you. And then that like is building your like improv skills. So that's why you're able to go into a totally new situation, just like figure it out. Cause it's like, you're writing the book on how to live your life. And mm-hmm. it's like, you're not going to figure it out until you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have like known you long enough to where like I've been able to like pick up some things from you on like how to like be a host and like a producer and like do all these things mm-hmm. and stuff. So it's like you're improvising and I'm like learning from you because you're making the experience like that. Well, I can
dope.
Learn from.
Yeah. Role yeah. modeling out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quick little plug for Spill It, one of my favorite shows that happens.
Yeah, it's coming up. It's coming up. You should go check it out. Somebody's going to be on it that you might know.
Yeah, it's true.
Something that you were talking about earlier, though, was just the editing that you do where you're just like, I don't do it. Mm-hmm. I think that it's possible to over-edit. And I think I oftentimes do where I say, this is good, but it could be better. Now what do I do? I don't know how to make it better, but I do have this idea of it being better that I will put so far out there that I never reach. That way I hate what I've already created and liked at the point.
Or maybe just never use it.
Yeah, so I think you guys should try that, you know?
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah, just setting our expectations.
It was a suggestion
like...
of more than anything. You guys can take it or leave it, whatever.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so try that out.
I think the lesson that I take from that about you, like not like having to edit, is because like I've heard a bunch of your stories and like I wouldn't attempt to edit them. It's like mm-hmm. maybe you just don't have to edit them, and that's why you don't. Is because
I'm just so perfect.
Yep, yeah, exactly.
Do it perfect the first time. You don't have to edit. You know? Look at that.
No. They're putting the work in ahead of time.
Yes.
They're learning themselves to the point where they are like free writing and stuff like that. And like it does take, it means that less editing is needed because you're just getting so good at your particular like art form.
Well, that's another way to do it. Yeah.
I think it kind of tracks back to the thing that you were saying earlier, where it's just like the people who improv put in the work off stage, mm-hmm. you know? So it's just like you have put in enough work of doing this at, you know, like last minute, like, which is the thing that helps your brain do it. Honestly, I'm doing the same thing with my fucking music right now. It's not all done, but my brain says it needs to be done by this point, and I'm gonna figure it out.
You're gonna have it done by Thursday. It's gonna be great.
And I think your brain honestly kind of fills in the gaps. That's, you know, I think that's kind of important, is that like if you trust yourself to fill in the gaps, like often you can. Because like I'll be writing a song and I'll be like, I don't know how I'm gonna get there, da da da, and it's just like I'll end up finishing it and look back and be like, I remember when I was right here and I thought that I couldn't, you know, get past this part. And I have this huge thing that I love. So I think, you know, it's building confidence in yourself and proving yourself right.
Yeah. So. Quick question on that point. Sure. So like it sounds to me like you're kind of like chasing like perfection. Like, do you always eventually reach the point of perfection, or do you reach a point where you're okay with it being imperfect?
Those are just a deadline.
I don't remember where I heard it, but it was the line that art is never perfected, merely settled upon.
Oh, that was me. I said that.
Yeah, that's who it was. Now I remember. Jane Dillinger. Ah, the best guest we ever had, and the person with that one quote.
that's what I want. That's my legacy. The person who said that thing one time.
Yeah, I can't remember her name. Have two things from Hemingway. I have two things from Jane Dillinger. So.
Hey, two things.
Do we have time? I wanted to do one quick little joke about the podcast.
Please,
okay,
please.
So I know a lot of people listen to podcasts like sped up and stuff like that to like get through them quicker. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to say to those people, nice. Nice try, bitch.
Jane, it has been such a treat having you this week. We will definitely have you back. I have been your host, your old pal Zane, here with Jasmine Nething.
Full stop.
And Jane Dillinger.
That's me.
Later, players.
Bye.